pray to you, O Lord. Then Jesus said to his disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager. And he received a charge saying that his manager was squandering his wealth. So he summoned the manager to him and said, what is this that I hear? Give me an accounting of your management, for you can no longer be my manager. The manager said to himself, what am I going to do? So that when he dismisses me, takes away this position, that I will still make it, because I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I've decided what I will do so that when he dismisses me as manager, people may welcome me into their homes. So he summoned the master's debtors one by one. He said to the first, how much do you owe the master? And he answered, 100 jars of olive oil. So he said to him, take your note, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? He said, 100 containers of wheat. He said, take your note and write 80. And the rich man commended the manager, the dishonest manager, because he had been shrewd in what he did. For I tell you, the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. Whoever is dishonest, I hate it when I stumble telling a story. Truly, I tell you, make friends with your dishonest wealth so that when it is gone, you may be welcomed into the eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. Whoever is unfaithful in a very little is faithful in much. If you then are not faithful with dishonest wealth, then who will entrust you with the true wealth? And if you are not faithful with what does not belong to you but belongs to another, then who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters. Either the slave will hate the one and love the other, or will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. The gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. Invite the children to head out for Word for Children. And that does not look like Kathy. That looks like Kathy. Actually, Max is going to be reading to them. I think Kathy's going to be out there to support him. The story is Googie Googie. I don't know that one. Max seemed to know it, though. It is frustrating. I worked so hard on getting that passage right and still got... I guess it was looking into your eyes. I was telling it through me. I'm going to warn you, this is one of those try-it-on sermons, okay? What I mean by that is like when you go to a store and you're thinking about buying some clothes, and you're not sure they'll fit or how they'll look on you, so you kind of take it and you try it on, and kind of look at yourself in the mirror and see how it feels and see if this is something that really fits. So we're developing a wonderful tradition here of being a place where interfaith dialogue happens. It is so exciting. We've done interfaith courses, and I think if you stick to the lead presentation and kind of update and celebration this after worship, you'll hear there's more plans to do that. And so we've engaged and talked about numerous faith, certainly Islam, but also looked into Jewish faith, I think some Hindu and Buddhist. and we're beginning to look at First Nations, indigenous spirituality. But I invite you to try on that there's a faith, a religion that here in North America is actually more pervasive, has more adherence, and if folks recognized it as a tradition, as a religion, would say, yeah, I'll put my faith in that. Wondering what it is, aren't you? There's a Harvard theologian, Harvey Cox. They call him an American theologian, and he really is one that is able to speak to America and speak on theological matters. And back in the late 90s, he was invited. I'm not sure if he was kind of strongly encouraged to take a look at how to invest his money and to participate in the stock market, but he certainly got involved in looking at the stock market. And he ended up writing a book called The Market is God. The Market is God. And from his standpoint, he said, let's just try on that this is a religion, and let's see how it maps on to other religions and other theological systems that we're familiar with. And as he dug into it, and granted, I haven't read the book, I've just read an article, but it's very intriguing because he starts talking about how kind of the free market is seen as having all kinds of power, almost omnipotent, as entrusted that if you allow it to do its thing, it will all work out. And certainly, there's a lot of faith in the market, faith in investments, faith that if you do it right, then you will be blessed and life will work out. And kind of the way he, at least in the article, the way he summed it up was this. This is from his article, The Market as God. Discovering the theology of the market made me begin to think in a different way about the conflict among religions. Violence between, at that time, Catholics and Protestants, this is from 1999, Hindus and Muslims, I think now we would say certainly Muslims and Christians too, often dominates the headlines. But I've come to wonder whether the real clash of religions or even of civilizations may be going unnoticed. I'm beginning to think that for all the religions of the world, however they may differ from one another, the religion of the market has become the most formidable rival, the more so because it is rarely recognized as a religion. He continues, there is, however, one contradiction between the religion of the market and the traditional religions that seems to be insurmountable. All of the traditional religions teach that human beings are finite creatures, that there are limits to any earthly enterprise. The Japanese Zen master once said to his disciples as he was dying, I've learned only one thing in life, how much is enough? He would find no niche in the chapel of the market. For him, the first commandment is, there is never enough. Like the proverbial shark that stops moving, the market that stops expanding dies. As I was pondering today's text and kind of thinking about this different perspective on the market, on the economy, on the accumulation of wealth, it just seems like lots of things resonate. And in that context, this first part of the gospel text, the story about the shrewd or the dishonest manager, seems to be primarily an illustration or story about how shrewd people who are living this out can be. The part of what the readers, the hearers of this story would have heard back 2,000 years ago is that a rich man who has these kind of debt that has people who owe him this much money would have gotten that, certainly not according to Jewish ways. It doesn't tell us whether he was a Jew or not, but if he was a Jew, then that means he was charging lots of interest and using going against the commandments of the Bible as far as accumulating that wealth. scholars say that those that would loan money back then used it as a way to accumulate more and more wealth, and they typically charged not just 25%, but up to 50% interest on these loans that they were making. And so pretty quickly, it was a way of trapping people into being able to pay their loans so they could confiscate their property. And so if you hear this as a story of somebody who's playing the market game really well, who finds out that one of his managers has been cheating him, well, then it makes sense. Then when the manager goes and figures out a clever way to have the game turned for him by being dishonest in the dealings, representing him, the owner. Wow, my mouth's getting dry. Then all of a sudden, when the rich man commends him, it all makes sense because he appreciates the shrewdness. Because in the market game, in the market religion, the more shrewd you are, the cleverer you are, the more you can find a way to get money or resources from somebody else, then you're winning. And you might say the god of the market rewards you. But this is just the first half. Actually, I would say the summation of that is beware. The children of this age, the people who follow this religion are very, very shrewd. Do not underestimate how shrewd they are. Now, this is Jesus saying that 2,000 years ago. When I hear that today, I think about all the ways that we're convinced that we can't live without something. More, better, or not even more, but the best, the most, all the superlatives. It's just like, yes, you deserve this. We get sucked in. And it's very shrewd. It's just when you stop to think about all the ways that we're kind of enmeshed in this financial system, it's pretty extraordinary. Pretty extraordinary. But the main point of this gospel text is about how easy it is to give in to the lure of money, the accumulation of wealth. Actually, the word used in the Bible, and if you heard this before in King James, you'd hear it, it's like you cannot serve God and mammon. The word there is mammon. So you might say the people that adhere to religion, we could call them mammonites, which would be nice to give them that kind of fancy name. But that's how he ends this. You cannot serve God and wealth. You cannot serve God and mammon. The story before this is the story of the lost son. It's a story about how a son traded the relationship with his father and brother for wealth. He thought that was the way to have life. When he realized it was bankrupt, he went back begging. And fortunately for his father was clear. His father was clear on what was important. Making friends, building relationships, community. So he welcomed his son back. The story after this one is the story of the rich man and Lazarus, where a rich man, because of his lack of generosity, ends up on the wrong side of eternity. And the poor man who was at his gate, who was begging and needed help just a little bit, just the droppings from his table, ended up in the so-called bosom of Abraham. Jesus really, he talks about money more than anything. You might say Jesus was clear that it wasn't just the pagan deities that he was in conversation with as far as religion, but really he knew the power of money, the lure of wealth. And Martin Luther said it this way. He warned about mammon 500 years ago. Many a person thinks he has God and everything he needs when he has money and property. In them he trusts, and of them he boasts so stubbornly and securely that he cares for no one. Surely such a man also has a god, mammon by name, that is, money and possessions, on which he fixes his whole heart. It is the most common idol on earth. I so wish I could read mine to kind of see what kind of conversation you're having in your head. But if you've tried on, that the market or mammon is a religion and that we adhere to it. And it's not like we can really opt out of our economic system, can we? We're all enmeshed in it. We money is the way by which we purchase things. So what do we do? Jesus gives us some handles. Actually, he says, "Don't watch out. It's easy to get sucked in this to make the accumulation of money an idol." But he gives some handles. First of all, make friends with the resources that you have. I would say, focus on relationships. Don't invest yourself in community, because then you're building up treasures in heaven. He also says, be faithful. Be faithful in a little so that you can be faithful in much. Be on the lookout for ways that you can go about developing the habits, the practice of generosity. Because every time you practice generosity, it is a statement of faith. It's a statement that I'm not going to trust in the God of wealth, the God in mammon. I'm going to trust in God's promise that if I am generous, if I share, that I look at the needs of others, I will be blessed. Every time you give a donation to the needy, it's a faith statement. Every time you cut a check to a charity, it's a faith statement. Every time you put some money in the offering plate, it's a faith statement about who you're going to put your trust in. Pardon me while I get a drink of water so I can keep talking a little bit. I'm going to ask you to try something else on. Money surrounds us. The economic system surrounds us. The lure of giving your life to accumulating more and more money and possessions is all around us. And I would say it's sort of like gravity. It's sort of like gravity. It is always there. It's not new right now. It has new manifestations now. But 500 years ago, Luther was talking about it. 2,000 years ago, Jesus was talking about it. 2,500 years ago, Amos was talking about it. It's like a gravity that constantly wants to pull us down. What do you have to do to resist gravity? Well, if you think about it, our muscles all develop because of gravity. The way that we're able to move, the very ability to get up, is because we have muscles that have been developed in order to overcome gravity. If we try on that being generous, looking out for others, is a muscle, like a generosity muscle that we have to keep on working on, then that is actually the key to what Jesus says is the true riches, or even just the truth. It's sort of like Church of Cross is a gymnasium. Come here to help develop our muscles. Now, granted, probably the more accurate thing to say is like sin is gravity. Certainly, money isn't the only thing that tugs at us, or the lure of money that tugs at us. There's lots of things. But today we're talking about money, so I'm going to talk about that. But think about that, we're a gym. So we come here to intentionally work out our muscles, to remember why it's important, so that we can continue to be free, be able to move around, be able to serve God. Because when our muscles get weak, our mobility goes down, our energy goes down, our abilities go down. When our muscles are strong, then all kinds of activity, all kinds of movement is possible. It's one of the keys to having a healthy life. So if we're talking about a healthy spiritual life, and there it talks about a righteous life, then we have to keep working on our muscles that have us loving God and loving one another. And the generosity muscle is one of those. So it looks like, who's been irregular going to the gym? It's easy to, isn't it? It's so much easier to stay home. So also, who's been irregular in coming to church? I've had my times too. I'm here pretty often now though. But if you think about it, coming to the gym, yeah, it may be easier to lay at home, but that doesn't move things forward. When you come here and avail yourself of worship, of our Bible studies, of our small groups, of the community that's here, we're reminded, it's like working out the muscles. And finding ways to give lots of reps to practicing generosity is good. Now, careful though, don't pull a muscle, all right? If you have a weak muscle of generosity, you say, okay, I'm gonna take my, you okay? Speaking of gravity and pulling muscles. But yeah, if you haven't been working out and you try to go in there, imagine taking a dumbbell 300 pounds on it. It's like, it'll crush you. And so if you're so moved by this sermon that you want to pull out your checkbook and take half of what's in your checking account and write it to the church, careful. I'm not saying God's not telling you to do that. But don't underestimate how this is a muscle that needs to be developed. Be honest about where you are. Take the next step. Add a little bit more weight. Make a choice to get in action and to look forward to the freedom that comes with it. We have several folks in the congregation who really have taken a look at their giving, and they go, wow, we can give more. And overall, their experience is they didn't notice. What seemed like a major sacrifice, all of a sudden it's had a way of balancing out. This is Jesus' encouragement. It's easy to get sucked into mammonism. Jesus knew that. But we profess to believe in God who is not capricious like the God of the market, but is the God of steadfast love, is a God of grace, is a God who cares about the needy. This God of the market, it can be really cruel, and it can kill and harm a lot of folks. We profess to believe in a God of love, grace, but also a God who became human and died on a cross, no money in the checking account, no property to his name, but yet was the richest person on earth. And the cross was not the end of the story. It's a faith. The true riches of the kingdom, the true abundant life, are only available if you find a way to work against and develop the muscle of generosity. Choose life. Choose freedom. Choose God. Amen.